Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
All right, let's do this. How are you? What the fuck, buddies? What the fuckers? What the fuck happened here? Oh my God, I had a brain skid. Right at the beginning, it was jarring. Did it jar you? Like, are some of you sort of hypnotized with the expectation that thing's going to go well? That first three list of what the fuck people are going to just drop right into place like always? I had that same expectation in that moment. And it went south on me right there right out of the gate. All right. Well, you know who you are. Welcome to the show. I'm Mark Maron. This is WTF, my podcast here at the Cat Ranch, working out of my garage, which I'm for some reason allowing to be hot. I turn the air off in the house. I turn the air off out here. I guess I wanted sort of a sweat lodge experience this morning. I wanted to kind of feel it out, get rid of the toxins. I don't have many toxins in me, but I got a few. You always got a few. I think the toxins can just generate themselves with bad thoughts. It's not all about what you eat or what you put in your body. I have this theory that's probably can be proven or disproven that bad thoughts will make your will create the chemicals in your body to generate toxins. Of course that's true. Of course it is. Why does sickness come from stress? It's an inside job. That's right. There you go. There's an analogy for a manifestation of your own self-destruction, even if you're behaving properly. Why am I sick? It's an inside job. No one had nothing to do with this but you. It's going to get you from the inside. Optimistic, beautiful thoughts for a Monday morning or wherever, whenever you're listening to this. I apologize. Everything's all right. I'm just sweating in my garage, and it's fine. I feel okay. How you doing? You okay? Everything all right with you? Special show today. Later in the show, I got my friend Jeff Tate in here. He's a funny comedian. We get into it. Get into some real shit about narcissistic parents. And then in a few minutes, I'm going to have John Mulaney and Nick Kroll doing their thing. They've got their show, Oh Hello, on Broadway. So we'll talk to them about that. But what's going on here? What's going on with me? Tour stuff, I do want to get a couple of dates out. And I know I do this, but it is what it is. This weekend, September 24th, two shows at the Wilbur. I don't know where we're at, but I know they got to be close to selling out. I hope. I know that we're doing all right. On October 21st, Campbell Hall at University of California, Santa Barbara. On October 22nd, Largo here in Los Angeles. October 23rd, the Ice House down the street here in Pasadena. And October 29th, Brendan McDonald, my business partner and producer, are going to be at the Now Hear This Festival. It's taking place in Anaheim. There's going to be like 30 great podcasts, all live and in one place. And well, you guys asked for it. You can now get single day tickets to the festival. It's on October 28th through the 30th. As I said, Brendan and I will be there on the 29th, but the whole festival is Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. For all of the info, you can go to nowhearthisfest.com for the tickets and whatnot. You can also get there through WTFpod.com. November 4th, I will be at Carnegie Hall, as you know. There's a few tickets left. Seriously, selling well. I'm happy about that, but nervous. I want to push this one, too. November 19th, Nashville, Tennessee, at the James K. Polk Theater. I'm excited to go back to Nashville. I'm excited to eat in Nashville. I'll be at the Vic Theater December 3rd. That's in Chicago. I just have to do this because they're coming up, and some of them are rescheduled, and I should want people at my shows, which I do, all right? I did have a few interesting moments recently, and I want to give a shout out to the unsung heroes of shoe repair. I don't know what kind of shoes you wear or what level you operate with your shoes, But I wear shoes that need to be resold. I don't wear sneakers much. I wear boots usually. And they need, you need a shoe guy. You got to have a shoe guy. And I need a shoe guy that feels like a real shoe guy. Like I can't bring it to, you got to walk into a shop, a shoe guy shop, shoe repair dude. You got to walk in and they always have like laces, usually belts and some purses and stuff. You know, somewhat displayed in the store, maybe in display cases, but it doesn't look like any of that shit is sold in decades. And then there's got to be weird pictures on the wall of, well, it depends where you live, you know, of like, you know, maybe celebrities that are kind of off the grid a little bit, like a Tony Danza shot signed. You see this at dry cleaners out here, too. But, you know, the shoe guy, it's important that he seems to know what he's doing. He's got to have that feel, that the old dude that's been doing shoes for a long time sees it as a craft, probably smokes cigarettes and right there in the back there in the shop. There's a lot of leather pieces around. There's a smell to it, that there's a sort of clutter to it, but you know he understands it. And he's just got to have this focus where you're going to trust him with this craft. It's a craft, shoe repair. It's a beautiful thing. And I imagine there's still plenty of these guys around, but they're not, it's hard to find a good one. Like I went to this dude, George, at George's Shoe Repair down on Colorado in Eagle Rock. And he was an old guy, but he was sort of abrasive. And it felt there was an anger to the heel he put on. You know, he made a comment about like, because my heels were wearing a certain way. He said that, you know, your walk is fucked up. He didn't say fucked up, but he says, you got a problem with your walk. It wouldn't wear this way. I'm like, I know. Can we just not attack me? I understand. Can you put the heel on? Then he told me about Red Wings subcontracting their heels out. And he used to do them for Red Wings. And I believed him. And then he just sort of slapped these fucking heels on. That he didn't know if he had the right size heel. I don't know. The conversation, he was smoking, which I like. He had pictures, which were okay. There was some other old guys hanging out. They were doing a thing, fine. He also sharpens knives, which is a nice plus because, you know, you need a knife sharpened occasionally. But I didn't have complete faith. I felt like he was over it and he was sort of kind of going through the motions with the heel that he put on. But then I went back to this other guy because I didn't want to go to the George. So I went to this other guy that I went to once years ago at Harutz on over here on Eagle Rock, and I walk in, and I feel bad about this, but I don't know what you're going to do. I walk in, the old man's there with all the stuff I mentioned, but he's got a portable respirator on, so he's got the tube going up in the, you know, under his nose, and he's telling me how he got out of the hospital, he's feeling okay, but he's going a little slow, but he's getting back into it, and I felt bad for him, but then I had that feeling like, what if I leave my shoes here and this guy doesn't make it? Is it going to be a problem getting these boots back? I like these boots. And I thought, like, dude, you can't really think that way. You know, if you want this guy to have the work and you believe in his work, you should give him the work and hope for the best. But I was sort of ashamed of myself that I had that thought. Like, I might never get these boots back because this guy might not live. And then I really didn't know. And it was going to take him a long time because he's moving slower. So I gave him a few weeks and I went back in there. You know, he called me. And I went back in there and I looked at these boots and the bottom of these boots were like art. They were like fucking art. He did a sole and he did a heel and he sort of like trimmed around the leather on the sole in a way that looked like he was, you know, focused on it. There was little divots in there that he put in that was obviously a stylistic decision. And he put a little coat of polish on the sole and the heel and it just had this kind of soft, perfectly placed vibe to it. And I couldn't stop looking at the bottom of these fucking boots like this guy's a genius. This guy's an artist. And he is. And he's got this respirator set up, so he's got about 30 feet of line. He can move around the whole shop. And I thanked him, and I thought it was beautiful. And we did a little fist bump, and he seemed genuinely excited that he's back in the groove. And I'm afraid to walk on him, but I can't stop looking at these fucking soles and heels. It's so beautiful to see a craftsman do his work with passion and focus and experience, even if it's fucking shoes. And most importantly, shoes. All right, so here we go. It's always a party when I have the young fellers on, the young guns of comedy. Some people think I bust too much balls on the young guys, but they could take it. It's part of their training. Right. But I happen to love Nick Kroll and John Mulaney, and their show, Oh Hello, is now on Broadway. Performances begin this Friday, September 25th, and it's running for a limited engagement of 15 weeks. So go get your tickets at ohhellobroadway.com. This is me and the incredibly funny and talented Nick Kroll and John Mulaney here in the garage.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowerte-Dienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowerte-Dienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
Can you hear me?
Oh, it's great. Kroll, Mulaney, the Young Guns.
Oh, yeah.
Estevez and Sheen.
Diamond Phillips.
So I saw your show.
You did?
Oh, hello. I was on it.
You were?
You saw it at Largo, man.
Yes. I did. Not only did I see it, I was the guy on it.
You were a wonderful guest on it.
I was the guest on it, the tuna, is that a spoiler?
No.
No.
It's fine. You can reveal it.
The tuna sandwich is, that's not a spoiler? People are going to go see the Broadway
show? It's oftentimes spoiled, but it's not a spoiler.
It's been left out, but it's no surprise.
So my thing is, it's very funny, and I enjoyed it. And I'm just going to get right into it.
Let's go.
You know, I mean, notes. I know you guys. I'll give you notes.
Please.
We're going to Broadway, man. We need notes.
We need all the help we
what
can get.
What is the theater in Broadway you're doing?
Lyceum Theater.
That's a nice theater. I was fascinated with the characters. George, give me the full name.
St. Giegland.
And that's you.
Yeah, that's me.
And
Gil Faison.
Because these are New York characters that are so ambiguous.
Thank you.
That like, but like, you know, where did those? I mean, I kind of know. Like, there's no point of reference for me to go like, oh, these guys,
right?
But you had, they're in Albuquerque. They're everywhere.
No, I know the guys
they're
who were
Berkeley.
Kind of artistic and never quite
also
manifested.
Rans, a couple of artistic also rans.
Yeah,
who are super liberal,
right?
Super misogynistic,
right?
A little racist,
kind of gay.
Yes.
Well, yeah.
I mean, as John describes George St. Giegland when it
yeah, my character's neither female nor Jewish, but like many men over 70, somehow both.
yeah.
And it's just and then Gil is like a little baby.
Yeah.
He's like an old man baby. And it's probably always, but I think it is that kind of guy who was an artist in some capacity, and so he sees himself as such, even if he's not creating art anymore and is not actually the bastion of liberal thought that he believes himself to be, like that of that baby boomer era.
Right, so these are those guys you just see walking around the West Side, the Upper West Side,
yeah.
That you just wonder about their lives, their clothes look really
I wonder
sort of
about
old.
Their money so much.
Yeah?
You I'm do? Like, you live in that building?
Where did it come from?
Where did it come from? How does it work?
I
even
wonder,
if it's rent controlled, how does it work?
Yeah.
How do you get a couple $100 together?
Yeah.
Because you're not working.
You're not working. You're saving ketchups.
Yeah. And like, where does it come from?
Where
I wonder,
that
I wonder that about everybody. Like, and then you just wonder, do they manage your money well? Or is there money there? Or do they scrape by?
I mean, I think
Social Security?
Yeah, I think they're on Social Security.
Yeah,
they jumped
and,
on
like,
that.
Just straight up pride.
Yeah.
I think like there's lots of eviction laws we don't know about that are super Byzantine, and it's hard to kick two guys out.
It is
their
hard
apartment.
To kick people out.
Yeah.
Somebody fought that.
And they're living on like the ramen flavor pack.
Yeah,
like
yes.
If you went into their home, you'd be like, "Oh, this is incredible."
If you went through their budget point by point, it would really suck.
Like, I get scared of that too. Just like you think a lot about like what you're going to do, and then you realize you just talk about doing it, or you think about doing it, and all of a sudden your life's gone.
Yes, these two. That's where you meet our. That's where you meet our heroes. They never became Richard Dreyfuss and Philip Roth, and they're kind of still not realizing it.
That's exactly it, though, isn't it? And it's just like, because like, if you don't have kids or you don't have a wife and you just have each other like they do or whatever the hell their backstory is that you don't really sense you're aging.
If all you have is the mirror to yourself is this other person who's in a similar, the same relationship you've had for 45, 50 years. Then...
And you still insist with each other you're going to hit it big and deserve to.
Yeah.
With no point, no reality check.
No
reality.
What's
how
the
did
point?
You, how did you guys start making the show? What was the kernel of an idea? Was it a sketch?
It was sort of a sketch. I was we hosted a show together at Rafifi. You remember Rafifi in New York about 10 years ago. And I had been hosting a show with Jesse Klein. And then she moved out to L.A. And I asked John to host the show. And we were trying to figure out what we wanted to do, whether we would do stand up or something. And we had started talking like these guys.
Yeah.
We had seen these two guys. At a bookstore at the Strand,
of course,
and they were
their own bags.
Yes, they each had their own
old
tote bag,
Strand bags.
The old Strand bags, which we used to say was Strand is 8 miles of books
and 12 miles of loneliness.
and so we go in there and we see these two guys buying their individual copies of Alan Alda's Never Have Your Dog Stuffed,
hardcover. Just came out. Great book, by the way.
Great book.
I just talked to Mr. Alda.
Yes, I know.
Wonderful conversation.
Amazing. He's such a real actor and artist.
Yeah.
In a way that
and
we're
a curious
not.
Guy.
Yes.
Like a sweet guy and like, thinker. And he's like, he likes science.
Yes. He hosted, 13 years Scientific American.
Yeah, he's very into making sure kids like science.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Can you imagine caring about that? That's so noble. I really respect that.
I that's why I don't have children, because I don't care.
Because you don't care.
Can you imagine pointing the stars out to them and lying and making up names of the stars?
So we see these two guys buy that book, and then we just immediately kind of become fascinated with them, follow them out of the Strand to like a diner, coffee shop.
You're following them now.
We are now following these two men.
Yeah.
And we follow them, and then as they sit at a coffee shop and both start reading their copies of Alan Alda's book, Never Have Your Dog
Not
Stuffed.
Not talking too much, but clearly like conjoined twins.
Yeah. And we just, they became a focus point of guys that we've been interested in.
Right.
This was also the time of like, what was this, 2005? This was when a lot of people through the New York Times had just heard about Jon Stewart or something.
Right.
It'd be like,
right.
People get their news from Jen Daly.
Yeah.
And you'd be like, oh, you're the worst.
Yeah.
And like those, like, it was those types of folks were really, that was that was a height.
They're like, it was a generation that maybe were on the pulse, you know, 40
close?
Years
yes.
ago.
Close.
Like when New York was like, you know, when Dick Cavett was on.
Yes, when Dick Cavett was on, when Ed Koch before and after became mayor.
And the literary lions meant something.
Yeah, and Elaine's was still
and
open,
it was like
you could get $30
and like maybe they ended up near CBGB's one night, you know, or like they were outside Studio 54. It's that time when New York was dirty and sexy.
Yeah.
And
kind of porous. They could have made it downtown.
And these guys probably weren't actually a part of that scene, but they were close enough to it all that they could feel like they were a part of it.
Well, the funny thing about the show is it does take on theater in a way.
Yes.
Is that like, you know, there's an idea about theater and what theater should be and what, and I don't know what it's become necessarily. It's definitely a big money business with, you know, shows that are based on movies.
We think we're going to be as big as Lion King.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
We think it's going to be as big as Lion King. Which has made about $7.5 billion.
But the show,
we don't have the economics of that worked out since we're a limited run, but and we have hard outs.
It's gonna be close.
Yeah,
it's gonna be close. But within the show, you kind of play with, you know, Armisen used to do a one man show guy.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So you guys kind of play with amateur theater a little in a way.
Amateur
and professional. Yeah.
But it is. I think the idea is that we both like love and hate theater.
Right.
And so
as theater fans do, I think.
Right. And so it becomes
had to
a celebration.
Sit through some bad ones.
Right. Like the tropes.
Yes. It's
of,
interminable.
Like, there's a new trope that John added in recently that George, when someone coughs. Yeah. Into a
handkerchief to show that they're dying. And they just have a little spot of blood. You
right,
know?
So then they can show the audience, like, oh, this guy's dying, okay.
Let me cheat that to the audience, show you a spot of blood.
Yeah, or the one-sided phone call where you get all this information out about what the other side is like. You know, like, Gil takes a call and he's like, trying to show you, and the police, that's who you are.
Well, we've seen great plays, and then you'll see plays where you're like, how did you know or think this was done?
Yeah.
You know, like, they just end.
Yeah.
You know, those types of midline. You're like, whoa, you're going out on a sentence.
Yeah.
I don't understand a lot of plays.
I don't either. And yet, I love going. I do a good piece of. I do think a good piece of theater is
good.
Theater
is the best.
Is it when it's really good? It's amazing.
Did you go see those Annie Baker plays?
Yes,
she's great.
Flick. I saw that. I thought that was unbelievable.
Did you see The Humans? The Stephen Carroll play?
No, I haven't seen that one.
That was very good. Those are new people that I was introduced to.
Yes.
By my friend Scott Rudin.
Dear.
Nice.
Yes.
Hey, Scott, if you're listening out there, hey, Scotty, we'll talk to you.
He'll go see you.
Yeah.
He loves theater.
I know. It was I saw Flick and Downtown, and I thought it's like over three hours, and I was not at any point bored. Normally, I could be in an hour and a half.
One set,
three people,
yeah.
3 hours, and I was enraptured the whole time, but I was sitting there watching the play, and this woman opened up a plastic canister of blueberries and starts eating it, and I was like, oh, thank you. And then there was an old man who was like a George St. Gieglin type wearing like a Nantucket hat,
right?
You know, like a Martha's Vineyard like pastel hat, and he became super focused on the woman eating blueberries.
Right.
So I was
watching.
In an annoyed way, gesturing to
no one and to everyone.
So angry to his wife. Can you believe this woman eating blueberries?
Was the plastic making noise?
The plastic was making noise. So he was going nuts. So for me, that I walked out of that show and was like, John, we have to do a bit about how everyone should be welcome to eat food during our show.
Yeah. And open your containers slowly. Yeah. Make a lot of noise.
But
don't
the
open
funny
them
thing
fast.
Is like when I talk to Annie Baker, it's like it's these subscription theater goers that don't know what they're gonna see, want to remain involved and think it's important.
Yeah.
And they show up for these shows that they're not gonna understand, and that's you two.
Yes.
You're the ones that go to that.
Yes, exactly.
We talked to Will Ferrell about it, and he was like, just wait for night 50 when the people are staring up at you like, what is this?
Yes.
He was like, it's the best.
But also, it'll be an interesting thing with our show because we are... George and Gil are
those
the
people.
Subscription
That's
theater
what I mean.
Goers.
Everything
yes.
about them is subscription, including
that
their clothes.
That was my point. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Subscription
so we
shoes.
Will see... We will
a
see how those people, normally.
The very small group of people that you're directly satirizing.
Yes.
Will actually come to your show.
They will decide whether we live or die.
Yeah, they're literally a dying breed.
Yes.
It's like,
the people we have flushed out of their holes and choose to satirize.
Yeah, there's going to be people in your shows in New York that are like, this is too close
it's like
to
having,
home.
Like,
too
like
close to home.
It's like having leukemia and it's only your estranged brother as the bone marrow to keep you alive.
Right. Although someone said once about like a comedian said about fat jokes, like they always work because no one thinks they're the fattest person in the room. I think all of them will be like, I'm not the most failed writer in here, so this is great.
Well, the bottom line is that in order to maintain a delusion long enough to still think you're going to make it, you don't think of yourself that
way.
No, of course not.
It's one of the saddest things about show business.
Also, I think that we live in. Yeah, you're still out there going like, I'm not the irrelevant one.
Yeah, no,
you're
going
to
happen, man. It's that you never know. You
never
know when
it's coming.
Louis Black was 40 when it happened.
That's what I heard.
And our guys are only 75.
That's right. And Rodney Dangerfield was 60 when he really
And I think they hold both of those men up as like
Lou Black was only 40 when it happened. We're only 35.
But our dear friend Lou Groovy is
Lou Groovy's still not happening.
Yeah.
How much improv is there on a given night outside of the guest section?
Given night can range. I mean 20-30%.
Yeah, I'd
really?
Say there's
because we forget a lot of stuff.
We forget
but that's
our lines,
fun though, right?
Yeah, and that's what keeps it. I think part of it is like we're kind of constantly trying to surprise each other with new jokes that will keep us invested and engaged.
Are you also, there's always a moment right before we walk out where Birdland by the Weather Report is playing, and we do look at each other and go like, I don't remember it tonight.
Yeah.
For those nights where it's like, I think I know it tonight. And then those nights where it's like, I don't have it.
I don't know. But we will sing right before the Birdland comes on backstage and we will sing a song to each other.
Yeah.
To the tune of Birdland about being close friends with the Mets.
Yeah.
It started off as.
Oh, the Mets
meet
are a
the
recurring
Mets.
Theme. Right?
The Mets are a part
are
of it.
The show.
You know, the Mets are, but all that, because that 80s, I grew up in New York and in the 80s Mets, that 86 Mets team was like a real. Key for me, but it's all of that stuff that I think is and but for some reason we sing this song about how you can become friends with the Mets. I mean, honestly though, this both started dead serious and the biggest joke in the world.
Right.
It's like, what are you gonna do? It's like George and Gil are gonna be on Broadway.
Yeah,
it's the biggest fucking joke in the world.
Yeah.
And yet it became the thing that was like
to them though. No, it's a fucking natural next step.
Right,
for George
a victory
and Gil.
Lap.
It's a victory lap.
Of
and
course,
and a you're welcome to New York.
Of course, are you gonna do special things because you're in New York? Are you gonna?
Oh yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah. We have special guests.
I mean, are you gonna get a Met?
Yeah, we're trying to get Mets. We're talking guests already. I mean, we're
going to get a Met cap.
We are. If we don't have Alan Alda on the show, I will see all of this as a fail.
Mm-hmm. Why couldn't you? Of course, you could get him.
Well, that's the goal. I mean, you know,
he likes to do things.
We don't all have the cat ranch, though. You know what I mean?
But you know, he likes to do things.
Yes, that would be a dream, and we'll have. But the goal is to have.
Name some other hopeful guests.
We had a call this morning about getting Trump's doctor.
Yeah, we want Trump's doctor.
Oh, that guy looks like
and we Borstein, want we yeah, want man, Bernie. We're gonna go hard at Bernie Sanders because Bernie. The idea is that George and Gil back to the Burlington days with Bernie Sanders.
Sure, sure, like,
That George and Gil were in the Burlington Three.
And Bernie might know about the one gay experience.
Exactly.
Yeah, at Durst Health Food Store.
Yeah.
All the preserves. Yeah. Nothing but the preserves watching us.
Yeah, that
everyone writhing on the floor.
Backstory that George and Gil were in Vermont when Robert Durst had opened the health food store.
And we drove him out of business. We said, you little psycho, get out of town.
Yeah. So you could just time travel with these guys.
Everywhere.
East Coast. Yeah.
There's some zealot.
Anytime I think they're getting irrelevant, like, bam, Robert Durst is out. And it's like, yep, that's them too. They knew him.
Bernie, Alan Alda, Trump's doctor.
We're gonna get a bunch of
Met.
Met. We'll get a bunch of Broadway people on, hopefully.
Oh yeah.
I mean, we'll be there during election properly in the election season. I would assume Trump will ask to come on.
We assume, yeah.
Would you do that?
No.
I guess not.
He's like a super funny comedian that, like,
It's gone too far. It's like
the doctor thing was so funny in the next day.
Oh, that picture of the doctor.
And then the Dwayne Wade thing came out, and I was like, dude, can you let us have your doctor for 24 hours?
Yeah, just give us 5 minutes.
Yeah,
for you to
enjoy your doctor before you're a monster.
Yeah.
Broadway people, like what, Nathan Lane or somebody?
Yeah.
Oh, we'd love him.
Yeah, Nathan Patty LuPone.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, I'd like, if anybody's listening, we want you all to come on the show, and George and Gil will be...
Jeffrey Gurian, if we can.
Oh, God, that would be a
Jeffrey Gurian is a part of our show.
You have to do two different deals, once for his hair, and then...
he knows that, though.
We had him on the off-Broadway run. He's our security, the Gurian
Angels.
Gurian Angels. Who, by the way, so we had Jeff Gurian on. People don't know Jeff Gurian. He's the king of comedy.
Google
Jeffrey Gurian. G-U-R-I-A-N.
You got it.
And you've seen him. You've seen him on...
Have I seen him? I've seen him my whole life.
Yeah.
Oh, I just... I don't know. Is he still a practicing dentist, or is he
Jeffrey
not?
Green DDS? I don't know if he.
But
practices.
He writes
he's a healer,
does comedy a lot.
But he's a healer.
Yeah.
And he.
He was a dentist.
He was a dentist. So he was our he. We had this thing called the Green Angels. He's our security, like the guardian angel. Yeah. So we made him a red satin jacket.
And
that's
we made
a Green
him a red
Angels.
Beret.
We made him a red beret that he would hold but won't wear because it will mess
with
his
hair.
Go,
you
everyone.
Should, if you could get Trump's doctor and Jeffrey Gurian on one show,
the odds that they don't know each other are
they
so
got
slim.
It. Know
so
each other.
So Gurian comes and does our security for. We did a press conference that we held that George and Gil held themselves. A hostile
comedy
press
matters.
Conference.
Yes. That's
comedy
Gurian's
does.
Website,
and we made it on there.
So Gurian is our security, and then he comes and sees the shows and goes, you know, I've been friends with
Curtis Sliwa
from the Guardian Angels for 30 years. I do his teeth. So then he brings Curtis Sliwa to the show.
Who wears the jacket and the real beret.
Yeah.
As he does.
He's the king.
And Armisen.
King of the satin
commander.
Armisen was our guest that night.
Yeah.
And I've never seen Fred. You've known
more
Fred
more starstruck, Rowan, never.
More starstruck than when he met Curtis Sliwa.
Oh, really?
Because he's a Long Island kid, you know, Fred. So he was like, oh, my God, you're Curtis Sliwa.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, I am.
Yeah.
And he was like, Jeffrey used to help me when I get my teeth knocked out. So their arrangement was like 80s Curtis Sliwa gets punched in the mouth. On the subway, goes to Gurian. Gurian patches
takes
him up.
Care
he's
of
back
it.
Out on the street.
Yeah. Cool. Gurian might be involved.
Gurian will make sure
that's
to be involved.
That's the one promise we can have.
Oh, who else? Though?
Who else? I mean, like
Joe Piscopo.
We've talked. We have an end to Piscopo. We want to go to Geraldo. We want.
I was watching this thing on
Cavett.
Morton Downey
Why don't you
Jr.
get Cavett?
Cavett was
Cavett
on the show
Broadway.
In New York. We
he
would
was.
Have him back. We
if Morton Downey Jr. was alive, we'd have Morton Downey Jr.
Yeah.
I feel like Gil would go to those tapings.
Oh, for sure he would go. But like, you know, there's like the John McEnroes of the world. There's like everybody. I mean, I'm also, there are a bunch of names.
All one of them.
Sondheim we want.
We want Sondheim hard.
Sure,
we want to get
Steven,
Sondheim.
If you're listening, we're huge fans. Duo hello.
What about Malkovich?
Yeah,
of course.
I'll take Malkovich.
We'll take Malkovich.
Good actor, great actor. Yeah. If he's listening, great actor.
William Hurt.
Oh, a dream.
Please. A dream. Dreyfuss. Richard Dreyfuss.
Richard Dreyfuss. Gil Faison. I think that's who Gil Faison has his
He saw
in
the
his
apprenticeship
crosshairs.
Of Dudy Kravitz and was like, why aren't I in that
Why
movie?
Am I not the George?
Why am I not yours?
I could have been eaten by a shark.
He's never even seen it.
No, never.
He doesn't actually know what it's
about. Dreyfus would be great.
Dreyfus,
he lives out here, though, I think.
But we'll, I mean, that's the goal is.
We'll do a JetBlue, like not a, Mint, but we'll fly people.
Yeah. We'll do a Kristen Chenoweth. We'll do a, you know, and then we'll have like the, you know, hopefully our friends who are
Kelly
in
Ripa.
New York. Kelly Ripa would love to have her. We want to go on. George and Gil want to go on The View. They want to go on.
Yeah, we really want. George and Gil really want to be on The View.
Well,
yeah.
That should be doable.
That's what we're working on. We're working on George and Gil, Dr. Oz.
Well, you all this money goes into advertising and doing these things because it's not a pricey production, the two of yous.
Yeah. It actually is. We have a proper Broadway set and
we
union
have a
guys.
Union
set.
Guys. But it is. It becomes a much bigger. We are trying to take a show that and scale it to wherever it is.
Yeah. So when we started to do bigger houses like the Wilbur and the Warner, it was like, okay, let's project a little.
So like by doing the test shows in these other markets, you realize like you could build.
Scale it up, baby.
Right. But you didn't have a set there.
We had a beautiful backdrop that was different than the Cherry Lane.
But that
set.
Was just for traveling
at
reasons.
The Wilbur.
So like our set in New York, our Broadway is going to be a
real. Maybe you could turn around and you're at the Strand.
I'd like a little Lazy Susan just in the middle, just for us to turn.
Just for, like, you know, dumplings.
Yeah.
For sweet
time
egg.
Has passed, and now a slow turn.
And now a slow turn, and we dip egg roll in the duck sauce.
A turn so that we can each pop a pill that we've pocketed the whole time. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it sounds fun. So the plan is you're going to have a guest.
We'll have guests, but we also, on the road, we would pull people out of the audience.
Which
so
was
we
really
would.
Fun.
My guess is we'll have a mix of Broadway people, political people, Hollywood people, comedy people, but then also we would pick like a kids out of the audience in, you know, and George
and
Gil.
We pulled a geologist out of the audience in Boston who was working on The Big Dig.
You know,
really?
Yeah, and in a way that's almost as much fun as, and I listening to your show, it's like sometimes it's the discovery of someone's life that is as interesting as knowing everything about
them. I get a lot of requests for people to, for me to interview just people.
Have you done that?
A person?
Yeah. Not a monster who's chosen to become an artist.
not someone with an artifice selling something.
I don't think I really have. Just a, like a guy who like you know, my optometrist is a jazz trumpeter.
Really?
Yeah, wow. He got a place right down here. But he's a Jew from Indianapolis, I believe.
Really?
His father, I think, was like a pharmacist or something, and he grew up a Jew in wanting to be a jazz guy, and he's part of the Indianapolis like
the
I
Indianapolis
should have him
thriving
part
Indianapolis
of the
jazz.
Indianapolis.
Has he ever played with Goldblum?
No, but he plays down here at the York like once a week with his trio. Oh, and he's got records out.
I would like, to me, I would
Dr.
love to
Kane.
Hear. I would happily listen to that interview.
He talks like a jazz guy. Yeah, really? Yeah, man. He talks like that.
He's like, yeah, you got a cataract,
yeah,
bro.
Yeah, no bros.
No,
but
yeah.
Like, yeah, yeah, man. You know, like,
I saw a doctor once who was a Lord Buckley enthusiast. You know, that jazz bow comedian?
Yeah.
And we talked about Lord Buckley.
The
Naz.
Yeah.
It was a full physical where we talked about Lord Buckley.
When he laid
time.
It stayed there. That is fucking Buckley's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would love to
De Blasio will take.
We'll take De Blasio. We'll take Al Sharpton. We're hoping for Al Sharpton.
You can get those.
Would
guys.
We want would you want Rudy or no?
No.
I don't
not
think
now.
So. Not anymore.
Mm. Well, I mean
we
too go, active.
We lay in. Rudy gets it. Rudy gets a piece from us in the
well,
show.
Oh, he does?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, like, if you guys, and I think you could handle it, but like, and he knows how to play, but you'd have to go at him a little.
We'd let him dress up like a lady, which
if
is
he
what he
to
wants
do
to
that.
Do more than anything.
And no one focuses on that anymore, but like, he did that like nine
the
or
eight
10
years
times.
That he ruled New York with like Gestapo like tactics, but then once he would.
Once a year, it'd be like, oh, look who's in the Rockettes. Come on, we're having a good time.
So
everyone's arrested. So, everyone get in the car.
So you're not worried about booking a guest for every night?
No.
I think because I want it also.
It's really
fun
to pull people.
It's fun to pull people from the crowd, and I think the crowd. It you want to just make people feel and I to believe it to be true like everybody that night is having the experience of being in that show on that
night.
Yeah. It's like I mean it's
and
like
also
watching,
by not remembering our lines it helps. Like,
yeah.
Have you guys tried crowd surfing at all?
Oh my god, those guys. Those guys have.
I think
those
I think I just added to the show.
I know. Well, by the way, there's like the calcium supplements that these guys are not taking.
Yeah,
they would literally crumble backwards.
And you just hit a hard flip phone when you hold their pocket.
Have these gone on sale yet?
Tickets are on
these
sale.
These suckers are on sale.
These suckers are on sale. When we were, but when we were
ohhellobroadway.com.
Yeah,
yes.
Come on. Ohhellobroadway.com. I can't. Say this enough. I mean, I will. Both John and I think are super comfortable pushing this so hard.
Yeah.
Like just because it's like the most fun thing to do.
Yeah.
So it becomes like I have no.
What are we going to lower its integrity? Go see the thing.
Go see it.
Go buy tickets.
The goddamn
They're
show.
More expensive than you think.
You're going to pay more than you want.
But it's
God
okay.
Damn it. Go to the
it's
show.
It's a night out.
It's
go
for
to
us.
Dinner on 44th Street.
Have a weird meal that's Italian.
Tell the waiter you have to leave by 6.
Go
enjoy.
Go eat expensive barbecue that's not that good and be exhausted.
Yeah.
Come to the show and be exhausted.
Go to dinner at 5:30. Pay way too much. Yeah. It's all over.
Try
at
to
nine.
Do right around the corner from the theater.
Do a peanut M&M sugar boost and then crash so hard.
There's 12
Get a
places
sippy
that,
cup of Diet
that
Coke.
Look exactly the same right there.
Oh, God. Yeah.
If you buy a soda, you're not going to get the cab because you know you'll whip it at the stage.
Yeah,
you'll get a sippy
cup. Terrible spaghetti and then come see the show. See
hard spaghetti that even a college student wouldn't make.
Stand outside and try to see if there's someone who will call.
Well, Lin-Manuel, get him.
There's a big ask out to him. But, you know, Oh Hello and Hamilton are big.
We're going hard at Hamilton.
Yeah, we're taking all the steam. Because the main guy left.
Yeah, because the guy who wrote the show and started
it. Did you guys see the show?
Yes,
we did.
It was very.
How much did you pay for tickets?
I paid a lot of money.
Is that my phone?
I think it's you.
Yeah. A classic marimba ring. Who do we have? Name names.
I get these weird calls from the New York area selling things.
Did you donate to a political campaign?
No.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, because I donated to our main man, Bernie, seven, 8 months ago. Don't jump down my throat. It was a while ago. And it was one who was cute. And now I get calls.
I'm getting. I get about three now, two or three calls a day from like Kissimmee, St. Florida, or like wherever.
Right, right. Yeah. And they're like, "You want to refinance?"
Yeah, those kind of things. It's like, "This is the IRS. We are foreclosing now." That would send George and Gil into a deep panic.
Oh my God! All they need is our credit card numbers. And they'll
Social Security.
Do you guys take Diners Club still?
Okay. All right.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
It was great. I'm so happy you guys are going to
be on the show in New York.
Be a guest.
When is it run?
We run from September 23rd to January 8th until the show gets canceled.
I don't know if I'm going. I'll tell you.
Come be on the show.
Don't you have business in New York?
George and Gil are
going
to prank
you
so hard,
baby.
I'm going
next week for a few days, but I don't know if I'm going back again.
We'll be there every night. God damn it, every night. For
Even Mondays?
Dark. Mondays were dark.
Mondays were dark. Mondays are terrible
Mondays
for us.
Are dark so that George and Gil can take an Epsom salt bath.
and float.
A 40-hour. They do an altered states.
Floating?
Yeah, floating.
In the bathroom.
Yeah,
they do it in their own tub.
Yeah, they do it in their own tub.
With a blindfold.
All right, it's going to be fun. I'm glad you guys came
Thank
by.
You, Mark.
Bye, Mark. Thank you.
Bye, Mark.
Fun, right? Huh? Aren't those fellas fun? Go see that show. It's something. It's like a beautiful, hot-rodded vaudeville. Go see Oh Hello, all right? You can go to ohhellobroadway.com. Jeff Tate is going to be here momentarily. Last night at the Comedy Store, I was talking to some dude. Some guy kind of cornered me, fan, but it was nice to talk to him. Australian fella. And I had to pee. I like talking to the fans and, you know, try to make some time, but this guy was talking. I'm like, I gotta pee. And finally, I just said, hey, man, I gotta piss. And this guy just looked at me and goes, all right, dude, kill it. Is that really the right? Does that signal the end of that term, of that phrase, kill it? Am I really gonna kill it peeing? Am I gonna nail it? Am I gonna do it out of the box? I might have done that a little. Anyways, Jeff Tate, funny dude, Ohio dude. His most recent comedy album, Again, is now available. You can check out his tour dates at justanotherclown.com. And this is my friend and me, my friend Jeff Tate, chatting like a couple of comics. Where the fuck did I met you the first time? At Go Bananas, right?
Yeah. The next time I was there when you were there was the weekend... I found out my separation was a divorce.
That's right. You were a sad sack guy.
Yeah.
We were driving around.
Yeah.
You were in trouble. you're in trouble.
Yeah.
And that was when I, so you, I see, I didn't even remember that first one that you were there.
Yeah. Well, the first one was a very, like the first one was interesting because it was like the first moment where I thought I could be a comedian.
Yeah.
Cause I did, you know, you're Mark Maron. So yeah. I had my guest set, my 7 minutes.
Yeah.
And I front loaded it with all whatever political, social commentary jokes I had at the time.
Yeah.
And then I just started talking about my wife and her parents and stuff. And my brother was in the back and he said that was when you came out of the green room.
Yeah.
So it was like, I tried to do all this, the Mark Maron influenced material.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I just started talking about my own dumb life. And then so I get off stage and you're back in the green room. And then when you get introduced after the feature, you walk by me and in the room, you just go, good show, man. And I was like, holy shit, I might be able to be a comedian.
Oh, I hope I didn't mislead you, Jeff. Well, I mean, those guys, certainly that shit about the fucking wife and stuff, that was going to hit home. Yeah, I remember you like you were in it. You're like, it was really happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then when I go back, that's when we went to the Creation Museum and created that classic WTF, me, you, and Ryan.
Yeah.
And some girl, right?
Yeah, it was that girl that Ryan was seeing from Baltimore.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Megan, I think.
Yeah, she was nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was smart and nice, and I couldn't understand it.
Yeah.
Like the fuck? Yeah, that was a great day. But you were feeling bad. So that means you started doing comedy in when?
2003, maybe? Early 2003.
And you grew up in Ohio?
Sort of. I mean, I moved there when I was 12. I moved there in 1991.
What was in Philadelphia?
My ex-wife's parents. And I started comedy, and then at the end of the very beginning of 2004, I think, something happened. Like, her mom took a health turn.
Yeah.
And so she wanted to go out there and be near them. So yeah. we just moved out there and lived there for a year and a half. Her mom got better. We moved back to Cincinnati.
And everything fell apart.
I met you. Then we moved. Then we had to move back to Philadelphia for a little while because she was working for her dad. And then we moved to LA. And then we split. And then I saw you again.
That's right. It was now it's sort of coming back together. The disastrous LA run.
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right. So wait. So let's walk through it. So because Ohio, to me, is a very bizarre place. But you moved there when you were 12. From where?
Southern Illinois.
Yeah.
Was the place I lived right before then.
Yeah.
I was born in Inglewood.
Yeah. Right out here?
Yeah. Out here in that hospital that became a soundstage. Like someone told me it's where like I was born in the hospital that Scrubs was filmed in.
Oh, really? It's that house? Is that the one where they do children's hospital?
I think so. Yeah. I think so. I'm not positive. This is secondhand.
I like it. And I added it to the Jeff Tate mythology.
Yeah.
That's what happened. It's now a soundstage where you were born.
And then we lived around Southern California until I was like 5.
Yeah.
Then we moved to up near Modesto, a place called Turlock.
Why? What was going on?
My dad's a minister.
Get the fuck.
Yeah.
What kind?
All of them. When I was born, he was Church of Christ, like the no music Church of Christ, the very fundamentalist Church of Christ. Then we switched to the Christian church, which sounds generic.
Right.
But that is a specific version of Christianity.
Just Christian.
Yeah,
but the Christian church.
Yeah, it's their bylaws and their dogma is different from other, like Church of God and Assemblies of God.
Yeah.
So we were in the Christian church for a while. Then when we moved to Cincinnati.
Yeah.
We started going to a church that was more non-denominational.
Like Unitarian?
No, it was still...
still Christian-y?
It was like non-denominational Pentecostal. Like, there was, like, speaking in tongues and stuff, very weird.
But it was vague? It's still Jesus-oriented.
Still a little vague, yeah, yeah. Still very...
Not affiliated,
yeah.
Is what you're saying.
Yeah, it was like a one-off.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
A mom and pop.
If I find out, the more I find out about that, the ministers and getting into the ministry and being a preacher, it was all kind of mom and pop. You don't have to be ordained, right? Can't you just...
No, that's the interesting thing about being a minister. And that's like... That's one of the things that has fucked me up was because my parents didn't believe in like psychiatrists and stuff and therapists.
Right.
And that's a weird blind spot in religion is mental health.
Right.
Because they have the faith and the Jesus and the God. So when you're
a Christian scientist, they don't let you get surgery.
Yeah, yeah. You can't go to a doctor. Yeah. So they, if they, but my parents thought those people were crazy.
Right.
Like if you fucked yourself up, you went to a doctor.
Sure.
But when I would start having panic attacks when I was 11.
Really?
Yeah, the earthquake in San Francisco broke me. I had like weird survivor's guilt.
Uh-huh.
We lived in Olympia, Washington at the time, but I saw it happen on television. I was watching the baseball game.
Yeah.
And I just saw like, that was it. Like once that happened and my parents were fascinated by it because they're my mom's from the Bay Area, Pacifica.
Yeah.
And they met in Berkeley in like 72. My really? Parents did, yeah.
Were they?
They were like the only squares in Berkeley in 72. Oh. My mom went to UC Berkeley from 64 to 67 and doesn't know any of the cool stuff.
None.
None.
She just missed it.
She remembers there being a bus that would park on the quad and it would make her have to like walk around it.
Yeah.
To get to class. And she would just be like, why don't these people just go to class? But it was like, was Keezy's bus.
It was Pranksters.
Yeah.
It was the Merry Pranksters.
Yeah.
Oh, she just missed, bypassed it.
Yeah. She's walking by like, who are these idiots? They're like, oh, that's everybody.
Oh, you were so close to having an interesting childhood in a fun way.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. Hippies can go bad too.
But I would have had a less interesting adulthood.
Right.
I feel like.
I don't know. Hippies fucked up their kids in a whole different way. They, you know, the Jesus discipline, whatever the hell you grew up in, you know, the no discipline fucking weed in the house thing, that doesn't always pan out either.
No, no, no. There's a very real chance I could have turned into Alex P. Keaton, the guy from Family Ties, Michael J. Fox,
right, sure.
Where his parents were hippie liberals. Yeah. And
so wait, so you're growing up with a preacher that just shifts denominations, you know, with the market, I guess.
Yeah.
Was that really it?
I suppose. I mean, there's a couple of like family jokes between me and my brother because we would hear the
just
same.
Just two of you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We would hear the same sermons when we would switch towns.
Oh, yeah.
So it was almost like my dad wrote 75 sermons and got tired of writing new stuff.
Right.
So he would switch towns. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, so really, he couldn't keep up, couldn't keep topical.
Yeah. Why would you? Why would you?
Do about a year one place and then just fucking bolt. So what was the goal, though? Like, were you growing up like, was he trying to amass a flock? I mean, how did it work? Was he a funny guy?
No. He had those, no, he wasn't funny. The things he did that were funny were only funny to me and my brother.
Right.
They weren't even funny to him.
Not on purpose.
No, never.
Not unintentional funny.
Like, every time he pulled his goddamn pitch pipe out of his pocket to start to lead worship, that would just make us giggle.
Yeah.
It was just so dumb.
But so did you grow up, you had to go watch him in church? Did he have his own church? How does it work?
We had to go all the time. It was easier for me to skip school than it was to skip church.
Uh-huh.
I would have to be, like, on my deathbed sick to not go to church. So, it was kind of looking back, it was very bad.
Yeah.
A lot of church.
But like when you go to another town or you'd move, how does it work? Is there a pre-existing church? Do you have to rent a church? I don't understand
No, there's a pre-existing. Like the churches would.
They hire you.
Yeah.
You get hired. Give me your resume.
Yeah. It was basically like these jobs are so very similar.
Yeah.
The jobs that. The job that I have and the job that he had.
Yeah.
Because neither one of us were ever really successful at it.
Yeah.
I can't compare him to you because you became successful.
I ended up in a garage, though.
Yeah, but you're still successful.
Working from home. It's hard to be a preacher from the house. Well, not really. I guess with a microphone, but you can't have people over.
Yeah, you can have your own your AM talk hour.
Sure.
For that. It was.
So he was a failure as a minister?
I don't know. I mean, I don't believe in God anymore. This is the first time I've publicly said that.
Really?
Yeah. I wrestle with it all the time in my head because I...
What, saying it or believing?
Believing, and I try to fight, because it's comfortable.
Yeah.
It's comfortable to say I believe in it, but I don't.
Yeah.
And
you don't use it.
Yeah, I don't use it because it's... Like, the God that they describe is such an asshole.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why? Mm-hmm. Why do I have to have that?
Well, what was the pressure like when you were growing up and you go to these different churches and what you have to show up in your suit and be the preacher's kid on Sundays? And
oh, yeah. Holy shit, man. The most trouble I could get into was if I made him look bad.
Right.
And it didn't matter what it was.
Yeah.
It was just like an 8-year-old being eight with a bunch of other 8-year-olds.
Yeah.
He would lose his fucking mind on me.
Really?
Yeah.
Because you, like, you embarrassed him.
Yeah. Jeez. I wasn't representing him or whatever.
And Jesus.
Yeah, I guess. But what about these other kids?
Like, yeah.
It didn't matter. It was all perception based. And
well, you give. Did they make you believe in hell?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was terrified of it until I read something on my own.
Yeah.
Right. And then when you realize, like, there's an interesting thing about the Bible. It never says people go to hell.
Right.
The version of hell that everyone believes in is from that book by Dante.
Yeah. Right. Right.
It's not
the Inferno.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah. There's no. There's a lake of fire or whatever. That where the angels that turned with Lucifer, where they go.
Right.
It says the people who die, who are unbelievers, are just separated from God, which is also a very logical like proof of reincarnation.
Yeah.
Like, why wouldn't this be where you had to come?
Sure.
If you fucked up the last one.
Right. But no hell.
But no hell, like there's no hell in the Bible even.
But when you were growing up, did you have to pray every night and all
that?
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Every night, every meal, all the time. It was very, oh boy, it was not, I'm starting to get a little panicky just thinking about it.
was that what your panic attacks were about? That the earthquake and God?
No, I was just I suppose it was the fear of, like, it instills an unbelievable fear of dying.
Yeah.
Because it's such a fucking crapshoot.
Right.
Of anything.
Right.
Oh, if you do anything wrong and then die, you'll go to hell.
Right, right, and right.
Then you see, plus it was just, you know, I was like a sensitive kid, I guess. Yeah. And just watching all those people die on television, and then every night at 6 o'clock, it would be on the news for another month or two.
Right.
And they would watch it every night, and we had one TV.
Yeah.
And it was just that same footage over and over. Like, there is...
catastrophe.
Yeah, man. There's, like, three things that pop into my head very regularly that I have to kind of push out, and it's the top level of that two-story bridge.
Yeah, the dropping, Bay Bridge, yeah.
The Challenger explosion, which I also saw live, and Dave Dravecki's arm breaking... that baseball player.
Like
those pop up in a loop.
Indelible.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember there was a period in pop culture history where people would trade these horrible videos of shit, bad shit. And there's a couple of them took years to get the fuck out of my head.
I think I saw one of those.
The guy shooting himself? People would put together those videos. Everyone got it. It was in a batch of whatever bullshit the freak who made it would give you.
Who gave you yours?
I don't know, man. It was going around. It had a collection of just horrible shit.
Like, I got
some dead kid being pulled out of a pool. It was just like fucking an assault of morbidity. And I don't know
Now it sounds... It is. It was horrible.
Yeah.
I got mine from Jim Short.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Comic.
Yeah. No, I know. Yeah. I might have gotten some source to... Like, because I met Short in San Francisco back when that shit was happening. Patton Oswalt was in the loop. There was just this just dark shit around. You know, there's weird magazines and just dark shit.
There was those Faces of Death videos.
But those were bad.
Yeah.
But I don't even remember if I watched one. I had one, but these were just bootleg videos of, like, fucking morbid shit.
Yeah, the bootleg ones felt worse. Well, the Faces of Death was always something that was being filmed.
Yeah, right.
And this felt like you were, like, sneaking and, like, peeking through a window.
Yeah, where the fuck they get this shit?
Who knows?
All right, so now you're a panicky kid. You got a dad who's a minister. The world is ending, and you're starting to freak out. And they don't help you.
Oh, that was the other thing, was the rapture and the apocalypse and all that shit.
Like, was that real to you?
Yeah, it was. But it was a constant. It was like a countdown that you couldn't see, where any moment, and they would say that you would hear the trumpets blast.
Yeah.
From the heavens, and then all the good people would ascend to heaven.
Bolt into the air.
And so it was like, it was weirdly, like if I would hear music with horns in it, just out of nowhere, it would startle me. I would jump.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it would turn out to be like Sam Cooke or something from a car at the stoplight.
Was your dad that kind of preacher?
Yeah, he became more of that as he kept... moving along in the religion. Like, that was more when we were in the Assemblies of God and the Church of God.
What is that one? What's the Assemblies of God?
Assemblies of God is very Pentecostal, speaking in tongues, holy roller.
Did he speak in tongues?
Yeah.
Really?
And my mom did too. My mom admits now, my mom admits that she was peer pressured into faking it.
Yeah.
And my dad won't admit that he ever did it. My dad is just like, I never did that.
Never spoke in tongues.
Yeah. Like, I remember you doing it.
It's like gibberish, right?
Yeah.
It's all
shabalas and stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, yeah.
And it all sounds the same.
Yeah.
And now, like, it's very easy to mimic.
There's a style. Yeah. You're going to speak in tongues like someone speaking through you. Make sure it sounds like everyone else who does it.
My youth pastor, when I was 17, his advice for me to speak in tongues was to just fake it until it became real.
So it's just a weird sort of, it's not really speaking in tongues. It's just like a device that, you know, was relieving.
I suppose, yeah. I don't even know if it's relieving.
What is it? What's supposed to be happening when that happens?
The Holy Spirit has taken over your body.
Yeah.
And now you are speaking in the language of the Holy Spirit and the language of the Lord,
which is gibberish.
Apparently, yeah, yeah. It just sounds it's just symbolic.
Yeah.
You got to warn me if you're going to do that again. I get a little panicky again. Like every time you do it, I try to hide my cigarettes.
That's it, huh? I'm doing it.
Yeah.
I'm doing it. That's all it takes. It's a trick. So he became more fire and brimstone when he realized that's the way you close the show.
Yeah. Well, that's a good closer. Yeah.
Yeah. Scare the shit out of people. Was he scary?
Probably more so to me.
Yeah.
Than the people in the church.
But
the
he wasn't a whack job minister.
I don't know, man. How, like.
No, but I mean, like, he wasn't like you'd see him on the fucking pulpit and you were like, well, who is that monster?
Yeah. No, you wouldn't do that. No,
that's good.
He was, I don't even know how to describe this. Like, I'm for sure not going to tell my parents I was on the show.
You're right.
My mom is much more Christian than my dad.
Right.
My dad seems like one of those guys who was like, well, this will work.
Right.
I could do this.
I need an angle. I need a hustle.
And then we just kept moving. And also there's like, my dad's parents weren't good parents. His dad was a real dickhead.
Yeah.
And was like very resentful towards my dad.
Right.
And so my dad grew up with like nobody really like giving a shit about him.
Right.
So someone had to, so it turned into, so he did it.
Yeah. That's interesting.
And now it has turned into like, I've been reading a bunch of books and it really seems like he's just got like that narcissistic personality disorder.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And that's one of the things that explains the 15 or 16 months in each town. Cause that's about how long a group of people can take a narcissist.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. My dad did that too. Like when he was moving from town to town working as a doctor. So it's narcissistic. It's not really a depressive cycle. Like your dad never got depressed.
No. Well, it's, narcissism is a reaction to depression and loneliness and of a lack of self-worth and self-esteem. So that's why any, like, I don't know if your dad does it. I think so from listening to the show and watching your show, but my dad can't take criticism at all.
Right.
Like, it doesn't matter how big or small the fuck up is. Yeah. It's always someone else's fault.
Oh, yeah.
Because as soon as he admits that he did something wrong, the whole thing starts to fall apart.
Right.
The whole house of cards.
Well, I think that my dad eventually couldn't help but take criticism, and then it did fall apart.
It's Well, my dad is not. He's still
in.
Fighting it. Yeah.
Is he still a minister?
He's too old now. He teaches a class sometimes, like a Sunday school class.
Right.
But he stuck
with it for the whole run of his life?
He stuck with it the whole run of my life.
Yeah.
Like, I still find out about jobs and stuff he had that I had no idea.
Oh, really? Minister jobs?
No, he was like a bailiff for a while.
Oh, you mean after you grew up?
No, before I was born, before he met my mom. Like, he didn't go into the ministry until he was 32.
Yeah.
And so before that, he worked on the railroad.
Yeah.
He was a teacher. He was a bartender. He was a bailiff. He told me a story that was accidentally hilarious.
Yeah.
Where he worked for a while at a furniture store where he was in charge of giving people credit for the furniture.
Yeah.
But this was in 1961, so there weren't computers and stuff.
Right.
So I was like, how would you decide whether or not you could give somebody credit? And he was like, there was a list of questions we could ask. Like the first one was, what does your husband do for a living? And the second one, and I was like, hang on, the first one, you don't even realize how absurd and hilarious that sentence is. What that means is that they train the credit guy at the furniture store. They're gonna be like, okay, the wife is gonna come in and pick out the furniture. So you have to find out what her husband does for a living. And he just never thought about it again, how bananas that sentence is.
What? It's probably timely.
Yeah. But it's still he just in 40 years or whatever, he never went back and thought about it. That's probably not.
So what happened? So you grew up in Illinois, and then what'd you do in high school? Were you a fuck up? But it doesn't sound like, you get along with your parents all right.
I get along with them okay.
Yeah.
Now that I understand my dad's brain chemistry a little bit.
Yeah.
It's like, you're either there to feed his ego or you're a threat.
Right.
And so it's...
That's interesting.
I'm much more of a threat to him than my brother, and that's why I always got the brunt of everything.
Where'd you fucking pick that up? That's pretty good. That's a narcissism thing?
Yeah.
You either feed their ego or you're a threat.
Yeah.
Interesting. What book is this?
This book was called The Narcissist Next Door.
Hmm.
And it's very fascinating, and it's one of those Gladwell books where it seems like it's going to be super boring, but the guy is such a good writer.
And also, but if you're sitting there going that's my dad, it has a little more relevance.
I recommend it to read right now because the first two chapters are about Donald Trump, and the book was written 6 years ago.
Really?
Yeah.
No kidding. The Narcissist Next Door.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to look, but I like that. You're either a threat or you feed his ego.
There's a lot of people we come across in our business where that's completely true.
Sure.
Have you ever done radio and had a bad experience?
Oh, yeah.
Then that was usually that's because you were a threat.
Well, that personality, the local, the regional, shock jock with the most market shares, those are always megalomaniacal, narcissistic dudes.
Yeah.
I'm generalizing, and I don't want to offend any of some of those guys are good radio guys, but that's true. If they feel like you're a threat right away, it's gonna be shitty. They're gonna fucking undermine you. That's interesting. So you're running around with your minister dad, and then you level off. Do you go to college? What do you do?
I tried college a couple of times.
Yeah,
I believe I could. I believe I have enough credits to almost be a sophomore.
Yeah.
I did
always
two
that option,
well.
Jeff. You can always just pick it back up. Time to go back.
I don't know. I don't know what I was doing because I was majoring in journalism in 2002.
Yeah.
And I quit college because I started doing open mics and was like, I just want to do that. So it was like I left one dying industry and jumped into another one.
Come on. The comedy's thriving.
It is now.
Yeah.
But in 2003 was when it was still death rattling its way.
Yeah. I mean, where'd you start?
Cincinnati. I started at Go Bananas.
Oh, that was your home club.
Yeah.
That's a good club, though.
Yeah. That was a great place to start. There was 12 comics total I started.
What compelled you, man? Who were your guys? I mean, why were you going to do comedy?
This part is going to be dumb.
No.
This part. One of them's you.
Oh, thank you.
My brother.
You actually knew me in 2002?
I knew you in 1994. 1993.
What, from Conan?
From Short Attention Span Theater.
Get the fuck out of here.
Me and my brother would get home from school and it was on, it might have even, right when it became Comedy Central or maybe when it was still the Comedy Channel.
No, it was Comedy Central.
We would watch that. I think Dennis Regan hosted it for a while.
Yeah.
And then there was
Bolster,
you.
Joe Bolster and Mark S. Allen, the weird DJ guy from Sacramento.
Now I feel bad because I just remember Dennis Regan and you.
Yeah.
But we would watch you on that show and we would see...
Kitelinger.
Did you do the A-List?
Yeah.
I saw that.
I did it. It was me and Amazing Jonathan.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Holy
and
shit.
And they used to put the headliner first. And then you wait. And it was he had done, I remember it because the guy comes backstage. He's like, we're going to get you right up as soon as we clean up the blood. Because he used to close with cutting his arm off. And anyway, I think it was, who was hosting it? Richard Lewis, I think, was hosting it when he was a drunkie.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So you knew who I was. I resonated with you because we both have narcissistic dads.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I didn't know why you resonated with me, but I liked the I liked your style, man. Yeah. I remember when this show started, I got a text from my friend Dave, and he was like, "Man's got a podcast." So started listening to it right away, and there was all these times where it was like, "Well, I met you, and it didn't go well, and whatever." And I would just listen and be like, "Man, if I ever get to do that show." I can say it has always gone well. It's from the moment. Me and Singer joke that we're like penance.
Yeah.
Somehow you're paying everyone back.
By you guys?
Yeah.
When did you start boozing?
Well, I drank heavily until I was like 22 and then maybe 23. And then I quit. I quit when Mitch died.
Did you work with Mitch?
No, I never met him or anything. I just, when he died, I was like, oh, I really want to be a comic. And if I just keep feeding my addictions, then I'll die.
Right.
Because I know how I am with drugs and alcohol.
That catastrophic thinking working in your favor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I started again when I got divorced. And I quit again on September 21st of last year. I got, today's April 21st.
Yeah. October, November, December, January, February,
7 months.
Really? That's fucking good.
Yeah.
Well, so when you're at the club in Ohio and you're just like, you know, kind of, you got a home club, were you on shows with people? Did you meet everybody? I mean, because you're friends with Stanhope too now, right?
Yeah, yeah. That thing.
Who were the guys that you were watching? How were you learning?
I was learning from Eddie Gosling was a guy that I saw come through the club, and I just couldn't believe how fucking hilarious he was.
When he was fat or
just after.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I worked with him. He middled for me in Texas when he was big.
Yeah.
So I think I've told this story on the fucking show before. He's driving me around. We're going out to get barbecue, and he has this little like Toyota truck. And every time we turn, the horn would honk. And I was like, what the fuck is wrong with your car? Why does the horn keep honking? He goes, my fat.
So he just had
pressing it up against it. It was pressing up against the wheel.
He had a car that didn't fit.
Yeah, he did.
I think if my car stopped fitting, I've bought new jeans before because of my weight fluctuations. Yeah. But if my car stopped fitting,
I'd probably really start
to work on it.
But he looks good. He lost all that weight. So you saw him and he just killed?
Yeah, I would. Is one of the... I've probably only fallen out of my chair laughing twice.
Yeah.
And one of them was him.
Oh, man.
I learned about trying to be myself on stage from you and Stanhope.
Right.
And the idea, well, also you, when I got divorced, I think like that weekend, Singer had that girl in town. So there was some element of, he was too busy to take care of me. So yeah, it was and he was busy with her, so that you were just trapped. So he like kind of matched us up.
Yeah.
And you talked me out of buying an El Camino, which was probably good. And you made me do a guest set on that Sunday night.
The day you got divorced?
Like 3 days later. And I was like, I just don't, none of this works. Like nothing's good anymore.
Right.
And you go, just do like 10 minutes. And I go, I'm going to fucking bomb. And then you said, do you think I care if it goes well? I just want you to know you can get back up there.
God damn
it. And it was very...
I'm not a bad guy.
No. No, it was very helpful.
Did it go well?
No. But it proved to me that I could still walk up there.
Right. It's horrible when you got the fear or you're all broken.
Yeah.
It's the worst.
We got married in 2006. And split up in 2010. So we were together from when I was 22 to 32.
Right.
And we separated on my birthday.
Nice.
My 32nd birthday.
Uh-huh. And what was it? What was the problem? I mean, did she have higher expectations out of you?
Well, I'm going to say right now, after going to, like, seeing a therapist every week for the last 16 months since last January.
Right now.
Right now, yeah. Since last January, I see this lady every week. If I'm on the road, we talk on the phone. She'll do phoners. And I actually usually see her twice a week.
So this is a new thing for you.
Yeah, well, I don't want to be like I was. Like a fucking disaster.
And she's here in L.A.?
No, my therapist is in Cincinnati.
Are you still living there?
I still technically live in Cincinnati. I'm okay. in L.A. way more than I'm in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
But this is like, I have an emotional, it was all that panic attack stuff. And it stems from that. Like, after 6 or 7 months of having panic attacks all the time, my parents finally decided to take me to a therapist, but were religious, so they didn't go to like a doctor one. They went to another minister.
Right.
And the thing about ministers is you don't have to be ordained.
Right.
The jobs are so similar between our job and their yeah, job, right. where it's just, you could just decide to be a minister.
Right.
And then if people believe you, you're then good. You're a minister.
Right.
And that's it. Like, you don't have to go to college or anything. You could take a class, but why would you?
Yeah. So what was the psychiatric experience?
The first one was nothing. My dad came with me into the room, which is not how therapy is done. It's yeah. supposed to be a safe space.
Right.
Where you don't...
Do you think he was the main problem?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do. Well, it was because I got... So the main problem really was... So I say to this guy what the problem is, which was that I see all these people die in my head. Like, we watch it on TV all the time. So now it's just in my head and I just can't handle all of this. But I probably said it in a way where it's like, they're always watching this. And so the next thing that I hear is not from him. My dad just kind of gruffly goes, oh, so it's all my fault.
Yeah.
It's like that right there is the problem.
Right.
Is no, it's not your fucking fault, dude. You're watching the news. You didn't make that happen. Why the fuck?
Yeah.
Why can't I have a feeling?
Yeah.
Why? And so, like, learning about this, like,
yeah.
myself, my mom, and my brother are just, we were sort of raised to be unbelievably codependent on him for our emotions.
Interesting.
And so getting around that, that's why we have our times now where it's very volatile, because I now am trying to establish emotional boundaries with him.
Yeah.
And man, that's a threat when I just don't cave.
Yeah. This is helping me, because I don't know that I ever quite framed it like that. That, like, you know, fortunately for me, you know, my dad is scared of me now.
Wow.
Yeah. But, you know, it took a TV show and a book and success, because yeah. they ultimately, when they're like this, they only see you as sort of this weird kind of annoying extension of them
yeah.
that they need to behave a certain way. And when you don't, you know, it's like part of themselves is rebelling. It's a weird fucking thing.
Yeah, it's so.
And, you know, like, they don't want you to succeed. They don't want you to have your own life. They don't want you to have your own personality, really, because that's all a threat to them.
Yeah.
It's fucked up. I never really thought about it that way. It's either a threat or you feed their ego, and that's that.
He still thinks I'm a kid. Like, he still treats me like I'm 14.
But undermines you, right?
Yeah. Yeah, right. Yeah, completely. And so I just don't, like, when he's mad about something, I don't
hang up.
Yeah, I just let it, like, this is about you. This is not about me.
Yeah, I just don't even take the call.
Well, I try to, like, I still technically live in Cincinnati because I'm trying to help my mom. Like, my dad's back is so fucked up that he can't really.
They're together, though.
Yeah, they're together.
Oh, so you got to deal with them.
Yeah, I got to deal with them. My dad, he can't really move around very much, so he needs help.
Yeah.
But he's the guy that doesn't ever want help. Like, not that he doesn't want help. He wants, like, he doesn't care if you'll do everything for him. He just doesn't want to, he doesn't want you to know that he needs it.
Yeah.
Because that's, now he's vulnerable.
Right. Interesting.
Like, just be old, man. Stop trying to fight it. Just, you're 76. In. What the fuck? Like, yeah.
Let it go.
Who are you fooling?
I know, dude. They're stubborn. So this is interesting, though. So you actually hit the wall, like, what? Just before you got sober and you're like, I got to get my shit together. What was the cathartic moment that made you decide to go to therapy?
It was another breakup where... This time I found out she'd been, she's, like, together with, like, she's already married to the guy she kept secret from me for a year. The entire last year we were together, she was friends with this dude that I did not know about, never heard his fucking name, and I would just work the road and stuff, and...
She was just stringing you along? She was having a thing with him?
I guess.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Right.
It really broke me up, and I kind of had to hit that point where I was like, I just had to hit the, like, I had to shatter.
Yeah.
Just completely. And I figured out, and so it kind of goes back to my marriage is I was absolutely a better husband than my dad was.
Right.
But that doesn't mean I was good at it.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean I was a good husband.
What happened when you two went to L.A.?
We just ran out of money. Like, yeah. I couldn't, I was, I seek out relationships that feel normal.
Yeah.
To me, whether they're good or not.
Right.
And so she would kind of, my wife would kind of treat me the way my dad would.
Right.
My last girlfriend would kind of treat me the way my dad would.
Right.
And it just felt normal.
Yeah. But not good.
Not good. No.
Yeah, I
just
relate.
Comfortable.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
comfortable, but only familiar. It's not comfortable.
Yeah, familiar, yeah.
Right, right.
It's like when you, it's like when you're like, ah, I don't want to be on the road. Like, I always want to go home when right. I'm on the road.
Yeah.
But that fucking bed at the Hampton Inn is way better than my bed.
Yeah.
So what is this shit in my head? It's like, I just want to sleep in my own bed.
Yeah.
My bed is garbage compared to some of these hotel beds I get.
I took a total flip on that. I'm so thrilled to fucking get into a hotel room. I'm like, I don't got to do shit in here.
Yeah, I try to keep my stuff neat so that I'm not... I learned a lot of this from the girl that tours with me. She's ahead of me in therapy and stuff. She's helped me with emotional boundaries and stuff. She's very supportive. Her name is Emma Arnold.
Yeah.
And she's a hilarious comedian, but also like just very emotionally smart. Her EQ is very high.
Yeah.
So it's very helpful. Like when I'm on the phone with my dad and she's around, she can hear me not maintaining my boundaries, and so then when I'll like when I'll hang up, she'll be like, "You let him get to you."
Yeah.
And I'll be like, "This fucking guy just gets to me." And she's like, "No, you don't have to let him. You don't have to like you decide whether he gets to you."
It's hard.
Yeah, it is hard, but it's nice to have somebody around who knows, who can help and be supportive. And she's very supportive and helpful with that. And I just was emotionally closed off. I couldn't handle the guilt and the fear of hell and earthquakes and all that stuff. So I didn't know what to do. There was no real help in church, or I didn't even know about like real therapists.
Yeah.
Like, I think popular culture and the views on things are very fucking harmful. Like, I'm not breaking any ground, but
yeah,
the idea of going to a therapist and all that stuff about getting in touch with your emotions, in the 80s they called it your feminine side.
Yeah.
It's like, that's garbage. Like, that pushes people away from it.
Well, I think the weird thing is, like, and I didn't know this about you because I don't know you that well, is that, like, ultimately what happens when you grow up like this is that you're sort of denied a sort of comfortable sense of self. So you have this weird fluctuating thing that, you know, kind of needs to latch on to charismatic people or people that are familiar because of your triggers and shit. And you don't have any ability to maintain boundaries. And you can't really fall back on anything. You're just falling.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, yeah, your trust falling into nobody.
Right, exactly. You know, and it's just sort of like, well, I always can just go and like, oh, be sad.
Yeah, yeah, and if I would trust fall and a girl would just like in this metaphor, if a girl was walking by, I would just like, hey, you're falling. I'd be like, all right, let's get married.
Yeah, exactly.
You're the only one that caught me.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I definitely relate to that because it's easier. And, you know, your self-esteem is in a place where you like, you're not going to get it from yourself.
No, it's based entirely on how other people feel about me.
This is sort of like, yeah, it's kind of mind-blowing because I don't know if I've looked at it. I've done the homework around, you know, my father's situation because my dad was volatile. So, like, the one thing I got from him in that falling thing is I was always angrily falling.
Yeah.
Like, I choose anger over sadness 90% of the time.
Me too. I did that too. Like, anger was my go-to emotion.
Right.
Because, first of all, that's the only emotion I ever really saw my dad show.
Right.
So I learned how to express that one, and that meant that every emotion I had would be expressed through anger.
Right, right.
It would start at anger and then work its way down to, oh no, you know what, I'm just lonely or hungry,
right,
or
sure,
fucking
yeah,
tired or whatever, just all this garbage, because I did not know how to process my own emotions or identify them. Because to stop feeling guilty, I started to just not have those, like, I tried to not have that guilty emotion.
Yeah,
but you can't pick and choose. It was just all of them. I just kind of boxed them all
shit.
Up
shit. So are you doing the recovery thing too?
What do you mean?
Are you like, going to meetings
every now and then? I go.
Yeah.
I don't like, I really enjoy the, let's say, camaraderie of
right,
it of
right.
being like, okay, I'm not the only one that's doing right. this. But I also don't feel like Like, I know how I drink. Yeah. And I'm not a straight up alcoholic. I'm a binge alcoholic.
Yeah.
Like, it's, I don't wake up like, oh, I need a drink. I just know that if I have one, yeah, there's a chance I'll have 40.
Yeah. It's going to go on a while.
Yeah. And yeah, I could still, you know, it took a long time in my life to reach a place where it's like, yeah, I would love to be a guy that could have a glass of wine at dinner, yeah, or two.
Yeah.
And have that and just know that that could be it.
Yeah.
And, you know, four out of five times, it is. That is all it is. But that other time, it just goes off the rails. And then it's 9 a.m. and I'm still drinking, smoking cigarettes in my brother's kitchen.
Yeah.
He doesn't even smoke, but I'm just so drunk.
Yeah.
He came down on New Year's Eve.
Your older brother?
Younger.
Uh-huh.
He's way more together than me.
Yeah.
But he bought a house and he comes down on New Year's Eve 2 years ago. That was the day I found out about the other dude. Like, this was like a week or two after we broke up, but New Year's Eve, I found out about the other dude.
Big days for you finding out bad shit.
Yeah, yeah. It's easy to remember. Thank God. So whenever I get around to writing a book, I don't have to ballpark it. So New Year's Day, he comes down because he's got to go to work at like 6 in the morning. And it's 5:30 in the morning. And there are 14 bottles of beer empty in front of me. And he comes down and he just goes, oh, this guy's back. And I was like, oh, God damn it. Is that what I do? Like, and that was the moment I was like, I got to go see a doctor. Like,
this guy's bad.
Yeah, because he had dealt with that for 2 years or 3 years after the divorce, and then I started getting better, and I started seeing this other girl, and I stopped being such a mess.
Yeah.
And then the minute it happened, it was like, suddenly it stopped being chaos, and it started being a pattern.
Yeah, yeah, right, right, right.
Where it was like, that was the first
and
time.
Sometimes only people outside of you can see that shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And for when he said, oh, this guy's back, like, I don't know if he knows how profound an impact that sentence had on me.
You can tell him.
Yeah, well, I'm sure I have, but I don't know. Like, I don't know if it really registered.
Right.
Because also we were raised in a way where we don't have very much. Like, we kind of force ourselves sometimes to have, like, weird emotional conversations just right, because we never have.
Right, right. It's weird. You know, oh, right. So you're in it and you're like, oh, it's too uncomfortable. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And we just, like, kind of push through.
Ride it out. Yeah.
Yeah, like, it's almost like those weird moments on Frasier when he and his brother have, like, like a real, like when they stop talking about coffee.
Yeah. Like, it just gets awkward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We do that. And so when he said that, I was like, I just got to see a doctor because he's right. This guy is back. And this guy wasted 3 or 4 years being drunk and blaming everyone else. And I don't want to do that again.
But you were doing stand up through all of it.
Yeah. As far as I knew. Right. I was drunk. I was blackout drunk for some shows. I was such a mess. And I developed a style on stage that kind of lent itself to that. So where it's a little loose already.
Yeah.
But I could have been better. Right. I could be so much better today if I hadn't done that, if I hadn't drank my way through.
I don't know if you should think that way.
No, I'm not. I'm saying that I think that way to keep myself from doing it again.
Okay.
Is because it was easy to waste 32 through 36.
Yeah.
But I don't want to waste 37 through 40, 41 or whatever, because I'm getting to that point in my career where, like, if I do kick the bucket,
yeah,
I've now been doing this too long and I'm too old for people to be like, man, he was gonna be something.
Right.
Like that window passed.
What did he do? What is there to watch?
Yeah. It's gonna be like,
got the one record.
Yeah, he had his shot.
How many records you got out?
3. Yeah. I just released my third one.
Oh yeah.
I feel like I've gotten better over this, like, since I quit drinking. It's just, this is also the longest I've ever tried to do the same set.
Yeah.
And so it's getting tighter and better and more interesting. I talk a lot about the religion and stuff.
Yeah.
And the getting away from it and all the shame they build into. I don't know how long these usually go, but we haven't even got to the sex part.
Yeah.
All that religious shame built into sex.
Yeah.
And all that stuff. Because I never got to take sex ed, so it was never...
Well, what happened? Well, how did it manifest itself?
It made me very boring to the point where I was bored. Like, I thought, I reached a point where I kind of thought sex was boring and chore-like because I didn't know that you could just get real fucking weird with it.
Yeah.
And as soon as I had a...
Well, what were you taught? I mean, were you just taught to stay away from it, or it was just for kids? You just have kids? That's it. Like, what?
No, I was taught sex ed from a religious... cassette tape series from James Dobson.
Uh-huh.
And they never actually talk about
the family. What was it?
Focus on the Family.
Focus on the Family. I haven't heard that name in a while.
Yeah, yeah. The Focus on the Family. They never. They should. There should be like a follow up, like a secular version that's focused on the clitoris.
Yeah, yeah.
Where you can actually learn things about sex.
Yeah.
Because this one was not about. It never once talked about sex. It never told you what it was. It told you when and how to feel about it.
Uh huh.
Why popular culture presents bad imagery and these things. And like the only thing it really tells you about sex is that it's something that you do with your wife once you're married, which is there's no information in that sentence.
Right.
At all.
Yeah. None.
It's just all you did was schedule it.
So you just had to figure it out.
Yeah. And I figured it out from I don't know. I don't think like. My ex-wife was raised very Catholic, so she wasn't particularly adventurous, so it was a lot of face-to-face.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
Fucking.
Are you good?
Yeah.
I'm good.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
That's good. See you in a week. And then I had a weekend last year where I hooked up with somebody, and she was very, liberating.
Uh-huh.
She was very, let's say, progressive or whatever.
Yeah.
Turns out it's fucking great, and it can be really weird and fun.
Yeah.
And
just learning that.
Just finally.
That's good. 37, it's a good time to learn.
Yeah, it's like right on the cusp of
when it
could
be. But you're a fucking comic for a decade or more, and you listen to all these guys. You've hung out with Stanhope and Attell probably. I mean, you know, at what point do you like, you think we were all lying?
No, I've never met Attell and Stanhope. The stuff that Stanhope did or would talk about
didn't
was
necessarily
so
help.
Weird.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like, those are way too many steps away from where I'm at.
it's like a fairy tale land.
Like I'm not on a scavenger hunt.
Right.
I'm just trying to figure out
how to have a nice time.
Yeah. How to have a nice time.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is my dad hit me enough that now I kind of want her to.
Yeah.
Whoever that is. Hit me with something. A remote control is a good size and weight and usually nearby.
Oh, no. Well, that's all right. As long as you're okay with it.
It's unbelievable.
Your dad punched you?
Every now and then.
Yeah.
I've been hit with a bunch of things.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He was one of those guys? Whatever was nearby.
He had a paddle for a while, like a big piece of wood with a handle.
No shit.
Yeah, it was just for hitting kids. Mostly just for hitting me. My brother can remember getting hit with that paddle twice, and I can remember getting hit with that paddle more than that on my birthday. Like on my 9th birthday, my 11th, like just various times where I would fuck up. I got a lot. I was confrontational, and I grew up to be confrontational.
Again with the dates, the memorable dates.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, it was all
New Year's birthdays. Not good for you.
Well, let's understand that there's been other breakups and other times I got hit that were just on random days, and those are gone.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't even remember those.
Right.
But there was my dad was so volatile and angry all the time that when he would start yelling at my mom or my brother, I would kind of jump in.
Right.
And it was like, this is weird. Like, I cried so hard like 6 months ago because I caught the end of Good Will Hunting.
Yeah.
And I hadn't seen that since I started to come to terms with some of this other stuff.
Yeah.
And I also hadn't seen it since Robin died.
Right.
And there's that scene when he's like, I would always pick the wrench because fuck him. And it was like, he never laid it out, like, which one do you want to get hit with? But I understand that, like, that idea where it's like, this isn't even about, like, he's yelling at him. And I'm just like, well, fuck this guy. And I would just get in the way.
Yeah.
And it was so, it just really broke me down.
Wow. It's an exciting time for you.
Yeah. Like, I can focus on the fact that it took me this long, but I'd rather focus on the fact that I figured it out at all.
Yeah.
Or that I at least figured out that there's something to figure out.
Right. So you're like in this, like you're in like this rebirth mode.
Yeah.
Everything's new.
Yeah, yeah.
First time.
It's very very interesting.
Yeah.
I notice my mistakes. My turnaround time is a lot faster. Like if I do get upset about something.
Yeah.
Or I fly off the handle. Like it happens way less now than it used to. And also I've now, like there are times when it'll take me like 10 minutes before I'm like, oh, I fucked up. Like, I should not have reacted like that.
Right.
And I just so desperately, I spent so much time trying not to be like my dad that I never, that now I'm trying to figure out what that means, like what that means for me being myself. Like, just not being like him is not, like, that's not an identity.
That's right. Who are you? I'm a reaction to my father.
Yeah. I'm the new Domino's pizza. Remember how they apologized because it used to be garbage?
Yeah.
I'm that. I'm still not very good, but I'm better than the old one.
No, I can relate to that. And you see, because like the reaction and the wiring is so deep that, you know, you can identify him in you.
Yeah.
You know, when it happens. You know, and you can see like all their shortcomings and how they fucked up, and you can see that shit in you.
Yeah.
So like, I guess the only trick is what you're sort of doing by having boundaries. You can have some, you can at least accept him for what he is.
Yeah.
And disarm that, and then maybe accept the things in you that are like him and try to change them, because you can't change that motherfucker, right?
No, you can't. And I can't, and it makes me crazy to try. Like, I don't even...
No, I can't. And they'll suck you into that too, because they play those games with you. Even like the like what I know is that like if they're feeling shitty, they'll fucking drag you right down.
Oh yeah, yeah. Because if they feel shitty and you don't, it's you're a threat.
That's a really good system.
Yeah, yeah. So it lends itself to codependency.
Yeah.
Where
I
like,
never thought about. I love that thing.
We were my brother and I would get. Well, it'd be me, but like we would get in trouble. We would get yelled at for goofing around when he was in a bad mood.
Right.
But the same, like it was so unpredictable, because the same behavior an hour before would have gotten no response at all. But now he's pissed off about something.
Right.
So now goofing around is an attack on him.
Right.
We're making fun of him for being angry or whatever when we're still just fucking 8 years old, man.
Like, this is sort of mind-blowing, because like, so there was no variation in, like, there were no prolonged depressive periods or anything like that?
From him?
Yeah.
Not that I can tell, no. Not that I can remember. Yeah. I mean, he'll only recently admit that his back hurting so much
right.
is depressing.
Right.
But that's it. Like, yeah. He'll be like, it's just, you know, it's been a rough year. So, and you're like, oh, you think this has just been a year?
Right.
Your back is hurt for a year. You've been like this as long as I can remember.
And you say that to him? Can you make him laugh?
No, I'm not going to say that to him.
Oh.
I can make him laugh, but not, not, it depends on what it is. He tried to stop my show in January because I was talking about Trump and that he liked Trump.
Uh-huh.
And he got up, Echo Bananas in the back of the room, and was like trying to get waitresses or the manager to get me off stage. And I had 20 minutes left. Like, the only time he ever gets offended at stuff I do on stage, I've talked about him being a bad husband, a bad minister, a bad father, a bad Christian. The only thing that pisses him off is when I make it sound like he's a bad Republican.
Well,
he
that's
really mad.
That's interesting, because like, because it's like part of him knows that that's probably true, and it is about him.
Yeah, so. Yeah, yeah. He loves the attention.
Exactly.
Oh boy, the amount. Like, if he could sell merch after my show, he would fucking do that in a heartbeat.
Yeah,
he loves to stand in the hallway when people leave and be like, oh, I'm his dad.
Yeah.
And they're like, that's you from the jokes.
Yeah. They don't care if it's bad.
Well, I learned something kind of heavy a couple weeks ago from my dad. We were talking about his dad.
Yeah.
And one of his brothers. We went to see his brother, and he was talking about how his brother got it way less than he did. And his dad lose, like, with no irony or self-awareness at all, is like, he just goes, yeah, Billy never got it like I got it. It was, you know, once I left the house, he loosened up a lot and has just zero awareness of the fact that that's exactly what happened to my brother also.
Yeah.
Like how my, like, oh, you did you exactly the same thing.
Yeah, right.
But he, and I said something about his dad. I was like, you know, that's wrong, right? Like, the way that your dad treated you was wrong. And he goes, no, Francis was really smart. He was a really smart man. And I was like, oh, shit. You think that because he was smart, he couldn't be wrong. You think that being wrong means you're not smart.
Mm.
And that just suddenly made a lot of puzzle pieces click. The Trump thing, where like, oh, I just think you're wrong about Trump. You think that that means I think you're an idiot.
Right.
That you don't know anything.
Right.
I just think you're wrong about that.
Right.
And I think smart people can be wrong all the time.
Right.
I don't think it has any.
But also the fact is, like this thing that I read about how you have to believe your parents are great when you're really young.
Yeah, you
they're
have
your
to.
Parents. Yeah. And if they're and if they're fucked up and you feel fucked up about it, all you can do is blame yourself.
Yeah.
So you know, that and that's where that wiring comes from. That's how you feel insecure and fucked up, is that you were denied something or abused in some way and you think it's your fault. So you you try this dumbass way of parenting yourself, which is just sort of like, I'm an asshole, I'm gonna drink, but that's actually you trying to fucking take care of yourself.
Yeah.
It's fucked up, man.
It's a weird fucked up thing. And I think my real reaction to that was never wanting kids.
Yeah.
And then I saw, like, in the last 4 or 5 years, I've seen people have kids who are really, really good at it.
Yeah.
And now I see them and I'm like, I could do that. Where you're like patient and you treat them. Like, I see these, and you're like, oh, you can never do that to a 4-year-old or a 5-year-old. It's like, I've seen people do that with a 5-year-old, and that 5-year-old is like the best 5-year-old.
Yeah.
Like, he understands, like I've seen people be like, no, I can't. Like, until you talk, I can't help you. Like, you just have to calm down and then I can help you. And then I've seen the kid start taking deep breaths, trying to calm down, realizing the situation.
Yeah.
Todd Glass talks about it all the time, but it really is. If your first reaction is to hit your kid, you're just an asshole.
Yeah.
Like, that's a human being.
Yeah.
It's not a thing you own.
Yeah.
You made it, but it's not yours. Right. That's a person. So like that's like a big shift where I can see like other versions of parenting.
Holy shit, I think you're gonna turn into a full, well-rounded person.
Yeah, I hope it doesn't make me unfunny.
It won't, dude. Some things never go away.
Yeah,
feel good?
I feel great.
It's a good session.
It does feel like that.
Good talking to you, man.
Yeah.
That's it. That's Mr. Tate. That was the show. That was fun. You want me to play guitar? Fuck it, man. Let me put my headphones in. My earphones. My earplugs. I got to put my earplugs in. Grandpa's got to put his earplugs in so he can play loud through his Fender Champ. Hold on a second. I kind of lost it there at the end. I thought I was playing Freebird. Boomer lives!
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.